Welcome to Business and Oil. Articles from the Midland Reporter-Telegram and the Odessa American. Read by volunteers at the Recording Library of West Texas.
Hello, this is Kay reading the Midland Reporter-Telegram for Sunday, November 10th, 2019. Section F, Oil Report. Analysts, accessing capital markets won't get easier short term. By Mella McEwen, MMCEWEN at MRT.com. Navigating a changed marketplace is a challenge for operators looking to grow, and speakers at Heart Energy's Executive Oil Conference last week cautioned that the marketplace won't improve soon. Mohit Singh, Senior Vice President, Business Development and Exploration at BPX Energy, the domestic arm of British Petroleum, noted that it has been a challenging market as the company tries to trim its portfolio of legacy assets it deems non-core. The company re-entered the Permian Basin this spring with the acquisition of BHP Billiton's unconventional shale assets, and Singh said the company is pleased to be back in the region. Since acquiring high-quality rocks in the Delaware Basin, he said the company has deployed capital and resources to its new assets. A second step has been trimming its portfolio of legacy assets, he said. Singh said that as the BHP acquisition was pending, we were internally positioning for these assets, but we also realized investors were expecting dividends. By 2021, these acquired assets need to generate $1 million of free cash flow. That requires planning and execution to stay on schedule. Already, he said the company has exceeded its expectations of realizing $50 million a year in synergies. It has been a challenging year for the industry, said Jeff Nana, Managing Director, Investment Banking at TPH & Company. He said oil and gas-related equities are at 57% of their 52-week average, the rig count has fallen, and the industry is drawing opposition from powerful people. Investors are angry, he said, in part because they hate losing money for long periods of time, and they're not confident improved commodity prices will bail them out of their losses. They're demanding capital discipline and the return of cash, he said. Companies are listening, but they have their own constraints. Debt, midstream costs, and ESG, environment, safety, and corporate governance, Nana said. Oil and gas companies are now competing with other sectors in the Standard & Poor's 500 for investor attention and must brace for higher equity costs, he said. Nana said that even with large investments in solar and wind energy, hydrocarbons' share of global primary energy demand will remain above 75% by 2030, down slightly from 84% today. Solar and wind, now a 9% share, will be at 22% by 2030. We have to grow this industry to meet energy demand. Global markets are showing an unblinking appetite for what's coming from the Permian Basin, said Tanner Moran, Managing Director, Hastings Energy Partners. He said that by 2023, 7 million barrels of crude will be coming from the Permian Basin alone. The challenge is finding a home for those barrels, he said, and that additional production will put downward pressure on prices, and further constraints will be seen if companies such as ExxonMobil and Chevron reach their goals of becoming million-barrel producers. Consolidation is the next logical step, Moran said. Nana agreed that consolidation is expected and is happening, though at a slower pace than expected. If you don't have capital, your best bet is to find a partner to help optimize acreage, operations, and costs, Moran said. The challenges facing the industry are not company to company. It is an industry-wide challenge, and the best way to address them is to turn to your peers. You cannot rely on recovering commodity prices. Your best bet is to turn to your peer group and band together. Like Nana, Moran said demand for crude oil is not going away. The oil and gas industry is a leader in tackling the climate crisis, he said. It may be a contributor, but it can lead in addressing the crisis. Analysts say maturing industry brings new management requirements. By Mella McEwen, MMCEWEN at MRT.com. The energy industry representatives heading into Hart Energy's executive oil conference at the Horseshoe last week represent a changed industry. The Leopard has changed their spots, said Reed Olmstead, director, North American Onshore Research and Business Development at IHS Markit. Part of a panel discussing the Permian's outlook, Olmstead said the industry now faces a shrinking box problem. In the initial stages of the unconventional resource play, value was added by expanding the box, identifying resources and filling the box with land resources, he said. Now that box is full. You're not delineating the plays any longer. Now you're managing that resource. It's a different mentality. Now, he said, producers are adding value by converting their inventory to cash flow. Investors are seeking different results, and operators are having to deal with that. That focus on returns flattens growth. Operators are living within cash flow by reducing activity. Olmstead noted that productivity has leveled off, and operators can no longer tout 10% year-over-year growth. Onshore production declines are accelerating and raising maintenance capital needs, he said. Still, he said, there's a long runway of Permian Basin inventory that will support growth to 2030. You're not running out of inventory. It's all about that shrinking box and how to manage it efficiently. Several issues facing the industry, particularly takeaway capacity, are being addressed. But Kendrick Ray, research equity analyst with East Daily Capital Advisors, said the new pipeline takeaway capacity coming into service through 2021 will exceed Permian Basin production growth over the next 4 years. New pipelines are offering discounts for acreage dedications or equity options, he said. Legacy takeaway pipelines will need to significantly discount committed rates, and midstream companies will need to offer discounted spot tariffs to fill the new lines. He said the pipelines under construction will shift export growth from the Port of Houston to the Port of Corpus Christi, at least through the second half of 2020, when pipelines backed by ExxonMobil and Chevron will shift export growth back to Houston. Excess takeaway capacity will be the new normal, Ray stated. Any good news from that scenario is that the differential between West Texas Intermediate Midland and WTI Houston prices could be $1 or below. The industry has the potential to provide the Permian Basin up to $200 billion in production revenues and 50,000 new jobs by 2025, said Tracy Bentley, chief executive officer of the Permian Strategic Partnership. Today, she said, there is a gap of 15,000 workers that the industry is meeting through overtime or with a rotating workforce. That is not healthy or sustainable, she said. By 2022, demand for workers will rise by 16% from 2016 levels, and truckloads on the Permian Basin roads will have increased by 125% from 2016 levels. If we do nothing, we lose up to $66 billion in gross production and up to 632,000 jobs, she said. The stakes are too high to do nothing. But to take advantage of what she called a generational opportunity, she said the industry must join all other stakeholders in Permian Basin communities in addressing issues caused by the industry's growth, from workforce to roads, health care to education. The partnership, founded last year with funding from 19 oil and gas companies, focuses on education, health care, housing, roads, and workforce development. What we're doing, there's no template, she said. But the exciting thing is the conversations being had in communities, in conjunction with the operators who live and work in them, about what their needs are and how everyone can come together to address those needs. Permian Operators Share Management Philosophies by Mellie McEwen, MMCEWEN at MRT.com. The Permian Basin remains the center of the action, the theme of Hart Energy's Executive Oil Conference, which was last week at the Horseshoe. Conference speakers detailed new challenges facing the industry, from disgruntled investors and a lack of investment capital to environmental concerns to establishing new management mindsets as the Permian's unconventional shale plays mature and evolve. Representatives of several companies explained how they're managing today's action. ConocoPhillips, Wendy King, Vice President, Great Plains Business Unit, Lower 48, ConocoPhillips, said the Bakken, Eagle Ford, and Permian are the three key plays for her company. The Eagle Ford and Bakken are more advanced, creating the opportunity to transfer learnings and technology from those basins to the Permian, she said. ConocoPhillips has 88,000 acres in the Delaware Basin and is currently focusing its activity on northeast Culberson County and the state line area. We're seeing recovery from formations we thought were non-commercial just a couple of decades ago. Developing its unconventional resources requires a rigorous approach to project management, she said. A continued focus on technology and innovation drives efficiency improvements and increases recovery, she said. That includes evolving completions, time-lapse geochemistry, microseismic data analytics, spacing, and stacking. King called it a steady approach with methodical execution and continuous improvement, predictability and efficiency, and a focus on safety. She described ConocoPhillips' operating method as SPIRIT, S-P-I-R-I-T, safety, people, integrity, responsibility, innovation, and teamwork. We have a very bright future here in the Permian Basin, but collaboration is key, not just in the communities, but in capturing technological advances, she said. Spur Energy Partners. Jay Graham, Chief Executive Officer, said his company is different from other private equity firms. We take a private, long-term investment approach, he said, acquiring assets as if they would be held forever. We target scalable, high-margin assets that generate free cash flow and deliver investor distributions. We exploit our commercial and operational expertise to mitigate market volatility. Another focus that differentiates Spur is its focus on the Northwest Shelf, Graham said. He said the company looked at other areas, but lacked the Northwest Shelf's multi-bench potential. The company acquired Northwest Shelf Yeso assets from Percussion Petroleum in June and in August acquired additional Northwest Shelf Yeso assets from Concho Resources for $925 million. That acquisition, made by Spur Management in partnership with KKR and Energy Minerals Group, closed November 1st. Spur now has more than 94,000 acres, 3,000 producing wells, 407 horizontal, with net production of 34,000 barrels per day. The assets have potential for multi-bench development of 6 Yeso landing zones and additional targets in other benches with single well investment rates of return greater than 80%. Graham said the company's one-rig drilling program generates cash flow. "We like to go places that need to be championed," he said. "We see ourselves as champions." Casa Oil and Gas. Mike Ford, Chief Executive Officer, describes Casa as a pure-play Delaware company with assets in Lee and Eddy counties, New Mexico. He said the benches the company believed it can exploit have jumped from about 6 a few years ago to about 13 today, with more possibly to come. "The Permian Basin is the gift that keeps on giving, and we don't really know what's next," he said. "The philosophy is to execute across all disciplines and generate returns so the company can make investor distributions. Its strategy has been to gain a foothold in a strategic geologic play and patiently, methodically build on that position so that once it has done that, has room for horizontal drilling projects," he said. Casa will be operating one rig back-to-back for the next few years, occasionally picking up a second rig for a short period of time. He said that in 2020, the company will develop 4 properties, picking up a second rig in the summer to develop some additional properties. "We believe that in late 2020 or early 2021, we will be developing properties solely out of cash flow and begin accumulating cash that we can put back into the company, pay debt, and return to our limited partners," Ford said. Henry Resources. President David Bledsoe said the company's conversion from vertical drilling to horizontal drilling has added complexity to its operations. "Horizontal drilling raises capital risks," he said, "and the company also needs to know the surface lease, how to space the wells, the number of benches to drill, and where the produced water is coming from." As a private company that eschews debt, he said the additional challenge is how to do that within cash flow. "The debate is between the mow-down philosophy, which is better technically, and the slow-down philosophy, which is better financially, but could reduce production levels." "We do use the slow-down strategy," said Bledsoe. "Slow-down is sustainable if managed properly." Henry has high-grade quality rock in the Midland and Delaware basins that are too small or difficult for large companies and plans to operate 1 to 2 rigs, drilling about 15 wells a year, Bledsoe said. Zarvona Energy. Like the others, Zarvona operates under a constrained capital budget, said Rob McCaskey, Chief Financial Officer and Vice President Acquisitions. Its limited partnership funds invest directly in the assets it operates and is currently investing out of Fund 3, he said. Like Spur, he said Zarvona has a long-term focus and targets foothold acquisitions with high-margin existing cash flow. The company then enhances value through drilling, cost reductions, workover programs, and enhanced recovery. "Risk is mitigated by acquiring assets in different regions for diversity," he said. The company has been active in the Lower Barnett in the Permian, drilling 20 horizontal wells in Andrews and Ector counties. Additional wells are planned in the Midland Basin portion of the Wolf Camp.
Elections Administrator explains confusion with bond results. The story was written by Brandy Addison. Midland County Elections Administrator Deborah Land told the Reporter Telegram that at no time Tuesday afternoon did she tell representatives from either Special Purpose Action Committee the bond won by 18 votes. She said they were all looking at the final tabulations when they realized some of the ballots were missing. Quote, "We were all standing looking at the reports," Land said. There were two reports. We've known that all along. Somebody said, well, wait, where are the other numbers? I said, oh, yes, you have to add them together. End quote. Kenya K. Murchison, who was a poll watcher for Better Bond for Midland, confirmed that no ballot board member told anyone the bond had won by 18 votes, though she personally thought it did, based on the reports. She said it was not made clear for any of the poll watchers where the bond measure stood going into the final tabulation. Everyone believed that the bond was leading by 12 votes, when it was actually losing by more than 30, and they just added the results from the new ballots to the 12-vote difference. Additionally, no election official corrected the reported telegram or the community for their interpretation of the results from November 5th. For more than a week, the community believed the bond measure was winning with a 12-vote lead and was reported by several media outlets as such. Midland ISD trustee John Trichetti even mentioned that the 12-vote lead at the State of the Economy meeting on November 6th after speaking with Land that morning. He said he was not made aware between then and Tuesday, when results were published, that the bond was not leading. Quote, what I should have said at the State of the Economy was that the 4 bond was down 30, Trichetti said. That would have been the most accurate statement. I found out along with everyone else last night that we were actually losing going in. End quote. Both on November 5th and Tuesday, the reporter telegram and community members were instructed to check the website for voting results and to not call the office. Final results were published on Midland County's website around 5 p.m. Tuesday, and the cumulative results showed the bond won by 18 votes. There were no instructions to add the by-mail ballots to the cumulative results, which has included by-mail ballots for every other election. Instructions have since been added. Quote, on election night, there were 2 reports posted on our website, Land said Tuesday evening after the votes were counted. Quote, one said unofficial results, and that was ballot by mail, which at that time was 501, and then the cumulative is only early voting and election day in person, and those numbers should have been added together, and no one was catching that. End quote. Sarah Gonzalez, who was a poll watcher for Better Bond for Midland, said the entire afternoon was, quote, complete chaos, unquote. She said there was so much trouble just to count the 37 new ballots, and the vendor had to make at least 5 phone calls during that time. She said she personally had thought the bond had won, not because Land had told her, but because the cumulative report indicated that. A few minutes after showing the committees the cumulative report, Land pointed out the mail-in ballots had to be added to get the true results. Quote, Christine Foreman was justified in her question, whose responsibility was it to let the public know? Because for a week, we all thought that the bond was ahead by 12 votes, Gonzalez said. We understood the report just like everyone else did, that the cumulative was cumulative, when in fact it wasn't. They did feel horrible. It was a new system. Either way, I don't think yesterday, Tuesday, was a winner for anybody. End quote. Land said the separate reports are a result of the issues they experienced with counting ballots by mail. She said this was an unusual circumstance, and the results were generated into 2 separate reports, and the office couldn't import the results into 1 report. Quote, in the future, it should be 1 report, and this will not happen again, she said. Ramsey announces re-election campaign. The story was written by Caitlin Randall. Midland County Commissioner Scott Ramsey announced in a press release Tuesday he will seek re-election for the Precinct 1 seat. Ramsey is running for his second term as commissioner of Precinct 1. He was elected to the court in 2016. He said in an interview Wednesday he decided to run for re-election because he thinks there's more left to do, including more roads to fix. Quote, "I don't think my job's done," he said. Ramsey said if re-elected, his focus will be on road improvement projects and tightening the county's budget. He said he's a strict fiscal conservative. Quote, "I think there is some spending that can be cut back," he said. He said he thinks the priority of the county's budget should be hiring and maintaining quality personnel, such as ensuring the Midland County Sheriff's Office is fully staffed. Quote, "I want to remain the voice of reason. I think I have done that over the last 3 years," he said. Ramsey said one of the projects he was proud of during his time on the Commissioner's Court was the reconstruction of the downtown library branch. He said the building was, quote, "in a need of a facelift for some time," end quote. Additionally, he said he wants to continue to serve as the liaison member of the court regarding the Horseshoe Complex. Quote, "It's such an extraordinary facility, and it does so much good for the county," Ramsey said. He said he wants to see the Horseshoe's far west parking lot paved and more large concerts and entertainment at the complex's amphitheater. Quote, "One of my goals is to provide something to encourage the younger crowd to stay in town," he said. Ramsey was raised in Pecos and attended the University of Texas in Austin, according to the press release. He has worked as a petroleum landman in West Texas for 37 years. There will be two commissioner seats on next year's ballot for Precinct 1 and Precinct 3. The primaries will be held in March, with the general election to follow in November 2020. Irkady wants to give District 2 attention it deserves. The story was written by Stuart Doreen. Adrian Irkady has filed to run for the District 2 position on the Midland City Council. Irkady is the second of two people who have filed to represent South and East Midland. The election to replace John B. Love III is set for January 28th. Irkady was born and raised on Midland's South and East Sides, the area that makes up the city's District 2. He attended MISD schools and graduated from Midland High School. Professionally, he says he has worked in oil and gas for more than 15 years and currently works as a health, safety, and environment consultant. Irkady wrote in an email to the Reporter Telegram that he believes a strong voice is needed for South and East Midland, especially as the Midland City Council will have turned over 4 of the 7 seats by late February. Quote, "With the results of the latest election giving us new leadership and representing women on the council, I want to give the other half of Midland's residents the attention that they deserve," Irkady said. Irkady wrote that affordable housing, roads, transportation, and safety are going to be issues he addresses in his campaign because they are, quote, "major issues this side of Big Spring Street and Rankin Highway," end quote. Quote, "There are brand new houses built on dirt roads here, and I don't see those problems in other districts of our city," Irkady wrote. He wrote that connecting District 2 residents with city government will be a priority and that he wants the responsibility of helping to, quote, "streamline issues and give resolutions that can make an immediate impact on the community. I hope to receive the baton from Councilman Love and have a running start in giving East and South Side residents the most qualified representation with a new council in 2020. In general, I want to be the strong voice and receptive ear for the entire community of District 2. Working together with our elected officials, Not only can we build a better Midland, we can do it in the neighborhoods that need the attention that they deserve in District 2, end quote.
Thank you for listening to this week's Business and Oil articles from the Midland Reporter-Telegram and the Odessa American, read by volunteers at the Recording Library of West Texas. Don't forget, you can also hear this program by calling the telephone reader at 432-617-5555 and by downloading at recordinglibrary.org.